Welcome to episode 522 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. Josh, it feels like, I don't know, 7 weeks ago that we did our special episode. This has been a week.
Oh, man, you're not kidding. Yes. Yeah, so a little bit of feedback from that show, some really, really nice feedback. I hope everybody enjoyed it. If you didn't, hey, it was only 15 minutes. Probably the shortest episode of Entertainment 2.0 that we've ever put out. So there you go. We do have a piece of listener feedback, really more of a question, has nothing to do with the most recent episode. It is a question about our normal stuff. This will be a normal episode for you, and the length of this episode is entirely up to Richard, because I think there's equivalent amounts of news and items in what's going on in Richard's Entertainment Center.
Oh,
so
possibly true.
We'll see. We'll see. So let's jump right into the feedback from Nathan. He emailed us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com, and he says, I like a lot of HBO content, so I'm interested in the new HBO Max service. However, I've tried HBO's previous streaming services, but I was always turned off by the ads. So, does HBO Max have ads? I'm totally willing to exchange my money for good content, but I'm not willing to watch ads. And yes, ads for other HBO shows are still ads. So, Richard, you're our HBO guy, you're the expert. Is Nathan going to be watching ads if he signs up for HBO Max?
Well, the good news is that he doesn't have to watch ads. The bad news is that there are ads. So what am I talking about? HBO Max, just like each of the past streaming properties that HBO has offered, does prepend an ad for another HBO property, another show or another movie or special or something like that, in front of each of its HBO streaming episodes or streaming movies. The good news there is that you can skip through them. Unlike other services that create this, like, I don't even know what you call it, like content protection scheme, where you can't actually fast forward through an ad on HBO. It's just part of the episode. So if you don't want to watch it, you just skip a couple times and you're past it. And maybe you have to adjust, but whatever. It's easy to not watch. So yes, it has ads, but you don't have to watch them. Now, the other good news is that HBO Max includes all this other content from DC and Studio Ghibli and Looney Tunes and, you know, half a dozen other...
Sesame Street,
half a dozen other brands that they own. Although, yeah, Sesame Street, I haven't checked that out, but maybe, maybe not. I hope they don't have ads on Sesame Street. That would be really, really sleazy.
Right. For like Westworld.
But what I have found so far is that if you're watching that very specialized branded content within HBO, in other words, the content that isn't specifically HBO content, then it does not have any ad content. So it's proportionally less than what you had in other HBO streaming services, and it's avoidable. So I would say bear with it. I'd also argue that, come on, people go to the movies and they watch trailers for other movies. So I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like it only really becomes a problem when I'm binging.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that answers his question. Hopefully that'll be an acceptable answer so that he can still get his good content. And I've heard you say, in fact, I think you said it two episodes ago, that the user experience in this new app is way better than most of the other HBO apps and better than a lot of video streaming apps in general, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They've done a very good job. They, you know, it's not, it's certainly no Hulu, and it's certainly way better than anything that HBO has ever put out before.
Cool. All right. So that's it for our listener feedback. Again, if you want to send us some, you can leave comments on the show. You can tweet us or email entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. So let's get into the news. And first up, it's some TiVo stuff. A couple of episodes ago, we talked a lot about the TiVo Stream 4K. And there's a lot of things that we liked about it, but a couple of things that really drove us nuts. And for me, were blockers. Like, my TiVo Stream 4K has been relegated to test device hooked up to one of my computer monitors because of this whole black home screen bug where you'll press the home button and the screen just goes black and doesn't do anything.
Right. And to be clear, this wasn't TiVo's home button. This was the Android TV home button.
Right. Exactly. So it would just take you to a home screen that's completely black, and you could press the TiVo button to get back into that app. But if you were going home to switch apps, well, sorry, you're hosed. And the only way to fix it was to reach behind your TV or wherever you have the thing plugged in and unplug the power from it. Or, like Richard suggested, hook it up to a smart plug,
yeah,
which is just ridiculous.
Install yet another smart plug on yet another right. streaming box.
Right. So you plug it in the smart plug that's also controlling your cable modem. Yeah. So they've put out a set of new fixes this week. And the home screen bug is one of the things that is supposed to be fixed. The other one, apparently some of the HDMI CEC issues. This is one I hadn't actually heard of, and I don't know if you had experienced it, but with HDMI CEC enabled, which is how it can control your TV and all that stuff for you, apparently sometimes it was turning on people's televisions.
Yeah,
Yikes. Yeah.
I did not experience this. This is nuts. I still have the issue where when I turn it on, my receiver flips through like three or four different things before it finally gets to recognize that the TiVo Stream was what I wanted. And if it doesn't, I have to press the TiVo button. And then it's like, oh, TiVo Stream. Okay, I'm there. Hold on. And that just makes me crazy. This whole idea that CEC can be used to automatically determine what system is active, I think is inherently flawed, but who knows? Maybe they'll be able to get it to work. That is still a problem for me.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to play with it yet today. I'm pretty sure this update came out today. And I heard someone else saying that, I think this was on Twitter, and I don't remember who tweeted it, but I thought that I saw a comment that said that it will also allow you to like completely turn off HDMI CEC now. So if you just don't want to deal with that at all anymore.
Yes, that's true. And do you know why? And here's the thing that's so ridiculous about this. The way that it actually controls your TV and receiver, if it can, is through infrared.
Really? So, oh, because the remote has infrared.
The remote right. has infrared, and through CEC, it figures out the brands of your connected devices and sends the appropriate infrared commands. Unfortunately, it does not send discrete on-off commands. Mm. It sends power commands. So, God help you if they get out of sync.
Yeah. But I mean, that is cool. That is really cool that it can figure out the right commands to send via IR.
It is.
It's very cool. All right. The other piece of good news here, it's not just a couple of fixes. The other piece of good news is they're still doing the promotional pricing. So if you were waiting for these issues to be fixed before you got one, but didn't want to have to pay the extra $20, well, you're in luck because it's still $49.99.
It is. And that's a good thing. And I sure would have loved it if they had given any heads up in, I don't know, promotional literature, notice to the press, anything that would let us know that that is extended and for how long, because we don't know.
Right. Yeah, we don't know at all.
So get it while it lasts, and maybe that's the whole point.
Yeah, exactly. All right, another TiVo story here. We actually have three TiVo-related stories here for you to start the show off tonight. The next one is from our friend Dave Zatz over at Zatz Not Funny. He noticed that the TiVo Mini Vox is no longer listed on the TiVo website. So if you've been thinking of getting one, well, you're not getting one straight from TiVo anymore.
Yeah, and the timing on this is like really curious, because this happens literally days after the merger with their parent company is completed.
Yeah. Yeah. So Dave was wondering about that, and TiVo actually did reach out to him with the following quote: "TiVo Mini Vox has been discontinued, aw, and will be replaced shortly with a newer model. Yay." I think that's good news.
I think it's good news. I am curious about this for a number of reasons. One, TiVo rarely actually responds to press prods and, you know, kind of the different bloggers out there, I would argue that Mr. Zatz is probably the biggest poker. He's the one that's jabbing the most to find out what's going on. So I'm really impressed that they reached out. That in itself seems like a change. Secondly, Dave has posited, and certainly this is based on industry rumors, that maybe, just maybe, the TiVo Stream itself is, in fact, the next TiVo Mini, because it could potentially run that soft TiVo experience that you and I saw at CES a year and a half ago.
Yeah, but that doesn't seem to really line up with what they said.
Doesn't line up with what they said necessarily, but if they had said maybe a newer device, then that would be perfect. They said model. So who knows? We'll see. This is really weird, though. I mean, I don't know. I find this strange. It's sure that the TiVo Mini Vox is the generation of the Mini that came out with the Bolt, and there is a newer version of the base station now, and that's called the TiVo Edge. So maybe there's a version of the Mini that's specifically geared to work with the Edge.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe it runs that software that we saw at no, never mind. All right. Well, one final TiVo story, and that is that TiVo, if you have a TiVo unit, not just a Mini, but even a Stream, but a TiVo box, TiVo has a new app. I know. What? This hasn't happened in like a year. So TiVo has added Pluto TV. So in addition to its own 200 and some channels that you can get through TiVo Plus, now you can also get 200 and some channels through Pluto TV. It's worth mentioning that Pluto TV also offers on-demand programming that's supported by advertising, and most people forget about that. They actually have fairly decent on-demand programming available, so that's something that's kind of cool. This is a little bit of a head-scratcher, though. The timing is weird. They originally had announced something that made pretty much all of the press believe that what they were really going to do is integrate the Pluto channels with TiVo Plus. But that's clearly not what they've done. This is an entirely separate app. So I'm wondering, it's not on the TiVo Stream yet, but it is supposed to come to the TiVo Stream. I am wondering if perhaps maybe what they'll do is integrate the Pluto channels into the guide experience with the TiVo Plus channels and your Sling TV channels and whatever else they might partner with in the future.
Yeah, that would make the most sense. But I agree, this is a little weird because Pluto kind of seems like a competitor to TiVo Plus.
Yeah, not kind of. I mean, it's absolutely a competitor.
Yeah, so I don't really get this. And I've talked about Pluto in the past so far as to say...
Not well, mind you.
Right. Well, I mean, I've never even given it a chance because I just don't care about these free TV streaming services because they generally don't have any content that I care about. It's not just Pluto. I don't have any interest in TiVo Plus. I don't have any interest in the free video streaming stuff that Plex has. Like, it's just not anything I want to watch.
Yeah, I think one thing that I would say there is that Pluto is worth looking at in as much as they offer a collection of channels that are, in fact, linear movie channels. And so very much like you might have TBS or whatever other ad-supported network on cable that plays channels or that plays movies 24 hours a day, similarly, you have that kind of experience included in Pluto TV now. And that could be interesting to some people.
Are they any movies I might actually care about?
Maybe. I mean, like,
are they
playing
good movies from a while ago?
They're decent movies. They were playing, I don't know. What's the Tom Cruise spy series?
Mission Impossible?
Yeah, they were playing Mission Impossible.
Okay.
An episode of that.
That's a good movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's not these unknown rom-coms that, you know, nobody's interested in watching.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, I'm probably still not going to watch, but that's good to know. It's good to know. All right. Well, I'm going to find a way to tie this back to TiVo. Our next story is about Android TV, which is what the TiVo Stream 4K runs on. If you want to try out Android TV and you need a new TV, but not a great one, TCL might have an option for you. TCL, who's known for making a wide range of TVs from like very inexpensive and you probably get what you pay for TVs, all the way up to very nice TVs. Like the TCL 6 series TVs are really nice and very competitively priced. If I were buying an HD or a 4K TV today, I would go out and buy a TCL 6 series, like without a doubt. Yeah. And one of the things that TCL's had going for it for a while is that a lot of their TVs have Roku built in. So Roku TV, you don't need the extra streaming stick or any of that other stuff. That's cool. But what if you don't care about Roku? What if you don't like the Roku experience? Well, now TCL has started selling a couple of TVs with Android TV built in. Now, it's only two. It's the and they're low-end TVs. This is the TCL 3 series, which I think is probably their lowest series. I'm not super familiar with their entire line because I don't really care that much about super low-end TVs. But they have Android TV built in, which is cool. Unfortunately, they're still not exactly the same in terms of all of the other specs as their Roku counterparts. Like, the Android ones have fewer HDMI inputs. What the heck is up with that? Doesn't make any sense. And the reason I also said, like, this is low-end stuff. You get two model options here. One of them is a 32-inch 720p set, and the other one is a 40-inch 1080p set. Now, I didn't even know there were still television manufacturers producing 720p panels, and I don't understand why they are. Like, wow. But they are. So, I mean, this is dirt cheap. That 32-inch 720p TV is $130. And yeah, the 40-inch 1080p model is $200.
I think you could make a case that anything beyond 720 on a 32-inch TV is just a waste, so why bother? But I think this is TCL dipping their toe in the water to see if this makes sense for them. The Roku stuff has done very well for them. They probably produce the best-selling Roku TVs that you can buy, and people tend to love them. So that's worked out well for them. And if there are other options that people like, that maybe if you're not a Roku user, you'd be interested in considering the TCL brand for, because you don't want some like rando OS that some company has created for their smart TV, this could be an option for you. Who knows?
Yeah, my only other concern with these is, with it being the low-end range, what's the processor in it going to be
like?
They're
going to be totally underpowered. Yeah. Guarantee you. Guarantee you.
You mean you don't think a $130 TV is going to be a powerful, you know, fluid, fast experience, mm-hmm. Richard? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a little bit concerning. And the problem there is, you know, if the processor in these is so terrible that the experience is awful, then no one's going to buy them. And then we don't end up with good TVs that have Android TV built in.
Right. Right. Well, or some other company comes along and says, well, we can do that much better. So we'll have to see.
All right. Well, next up, I can't think of a way to tie this back to TiVo, so I guess I'll stop trying. Fubo TV. This is the online streaming service. It is a live TV service similar to like the Hulu Live or YouTube Live TV, that sort of service. But in this case, it is a service that Richard will never sign up for, because it is a service that is basically geared towards sports fans. Man, I wonder how they're doing right now, because there aren't any sports to watch.
Oh, ouch.
But, well, and I don't say that to be mean or a jerk, but there aren't a lot of sports to watch right now. So that's got to be rough for them. So the interesting part here is that Fubo TV is now available on the Xbox One. And what makes that kind of cool is that if you have an Xbox One S or an Xbox One X, which can both output 4K video, well, Fubo TV is one of the few online video, you know, live TV streaming services like this that does offer a lot of stuff in 4K. I believe they did some of the Olympics in 4K, or am I maybe thinking of World Cup? It might have been World Cup. They've been there at the forefront with 4K, and obviously the Xbox has more than enough horsepower to watch all of that stuff in 4K. So this is, like I said, this is very similar to Sling and all those other things. It's a service that comes in. The base package is about $55 a month. They've got add-ons. It does have an online cloud DVR service, and the base package has more sports channels than most of the other guys would, and as extra add-ons to get you tons of sports channels that most of the other services don't even offer. All right, one more video story here. I kind of want Richard to handle this one, because the last time we talked about a service getting whacked, it was from the Apple TV. So I made him talk about that one. But this one is Hulu cutting off older Roku players. So after June 24th, if you've got an ancient Roku device, I guess I am not up to date on the like 7,000 different models that Roku has put
out
there.
And that's the thing that's so confusing about Roku, because until they got to their like second and third generation, they didn't really have good naming. They used model numbers that were four digits long, and it was insane. But the gist of this is that if you have a newer device that can get the 8.1 Roku OS update or later, you're fine. So if you've updated your device since sometime in 2018, you're probably okay. If your device has not allowed you to get updates since 2018, you may want to check devices, because those first generation boxes, before we even had the concept of a Roku 2 or a Roku 3, and the first like couple runs of Roku sticks before we got to the Roku Stick HD or Roku Stick 2, but not, and here's where it gets confusing, not all of the original things that were called Roku Stick. It depends on the model number. But if you have a Roku Stick that couldn't get the 8.1 update, then it is also not going to be able to run the latest version of Hulu. This isn't the folks at Hulu being jerks. This is just technology changing over years. I mean, come on. It's been, what, 10 years since that first Roku device came out. So we can't really expect software companies to continue to develop to the lowest common denominator and still be able to deliver a high-end experience. And frankly, consumers have been banging on Hulu to deliver something better than what they did before. And that's what they're doing. So to make that possible, they're going to have to cut off those lower-end devices.
Yeah, and man, if you bought a Roku 10 years ago for $40, I think you got your money worth. Maybe it's just time to buy
a new one. If you bought a Roku 10 years ago, you probably paid more like $80 or $90. But you can buy one now for $40 that's like 4K. So just do
it. Right, exactly. Or maybe it's a good time to check out some of your other options, because there's a bunch of good ones out there.
Yep.
The Fire Sticks are good, unless you want HBO. I mean, maybe that's a good reason to switch, too. If you want HBO Max, still not on Roku.
Roku doesn't get HBO Max. Fire doesn't get HBO Max. What are you left with on the low end? Nothing. Right? Because you have to step up to an Apple TV.
Well, any Android TV player would work.
Okay, so you could buy buy the stream, the TiVo stream. Get a TiVo stream so you can get HBO Max.
There you go.
$50.
Does TiVo stream have HBO Max?
It absolutely does.
Okay.
And HBO Max is available as an app that you can get to. It will eventually, at some point, be integrated into the TiVo experience, because today, TiVo Now is integrated into the TiVo experience.
Okay. HBO Now. Yeah.
Sorry. HBO Now. TiVo Now, HBO. Too many brands.
TiVo many Plus, brands. HBO Now.
Yeah.
HBO Max. Yeah.
HBO Go, HBO Now, HBO Max.
All right. A couple of quick-ish. Richard is rolling his eyes as I say quick when he sees all the bullet points here. But quick-ish. Gaming stories here for you before we get to Richard's, like, I don't know, 24 bullet points and what's going on in his entertainment center. Two stories. One is the May 2020 Xbox One update has arrived. If you've used your Xbox in the last week and a half, 2 weeks, you've already probably noticed it. It's not a massive update. It's pretty much just that guide update that we had talked about a couple of months ago that we thought was going to be in the previous update, and then it just wasn't, and they didn't mention anything about it. Now it's available in this May update. And real quick, basically, it's the main thing is that they've reorganized that guide. So now, instead of you starting in the middle of the five or six tabs of that, you start at the left and you work your way to the right. And they hope that they've put the things that you want closer to the left. But if they didn't, you can customize it. You can move these things around so that you can get to the things that you use the most quickly. So for me, the parties and chat option is the third option over. It's probably the one I use the most. So I'm okay with that being pretty close there. I like that party and chat is kind of combined. It shows you the current party that you're in, any party invitations you've got, an option to get to all of your chat conversations, and then below that, an option to get to all of your message requests. If you're like, wait, what? Message request? What's that? Oh, that's that place where you get message from all of those hateful people out there who are like, you're terrible, go and throw yourself off a bridge because you're awful at this game. Like, those types of messages.
This is why I don't do this.
Oh my gosh. Like, there are some awful people that play video games. Like, I had to actually kind of censor that back a little bit compared to what some people do say. And then also all of the like spam messages that you'll get from like, hi, I'm a single lady and blah, blah, you know, that sort of crap. All of that's
on your message. I'm sure you censored that significantly.
Yes. Yes. Yes, I did. And then all the way at the far right, they combined the profile section, which is like where you would go to sign in as a different account or something like that. They combine that with settings. So it almost seems like they've buried settings. Like, it's kind of hard to find them because there used to be a gear. I think it was a gear. You know, something that was super obvious as settings. Yeah. And now it's your avatar. So that's a little weird. That's kind of annoying. The other thing that they added, it has nothing to do with the guide. Instead, it's when you go to your list of games and apps, they've added two more filters. One is for game genre, and one is for player count. I totally forgot to check this aspect of it out tonight. I'm pretty sure player count means how many people can play this game at a time. It's not like how many people are currently playing this game online, which would be cool.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that. I'm pretty sure it's like, this is a two-player game. This is a four-player game. This is a single-player game. That sort of thing. Which is also really nice to have. And more important than the, there are 11 billion people playing Call of Duty right now. Like, that's not super useful. It's just kind of cool. So, that's it for the May 2020 update. I mean, we are 7 years in almost to the Xbox One life cycle. You can't be expecting a lot of major new features at this point.
So you got this? You got the update? Or this is coming soon?
No, it's already available.
All right. I'll have to try this. I am curious, for those situations where you get to the menu from, like, running through your, I think they used to call them pivots. Now they kind of look more like tabs.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go left, 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 left until you get over to that. So now when that opens, are you on the far left of that? And you then have to move like right to get to the other stuff? Or do you move down a little? Like, how does is the navigation horizontal or vertical in that panel now?
It's still basically horizontal, like to get between the different tabs, if that's what we're going to call them. And then everything within each section is a vertical list.
Okay.
That aspect of it didn't really change. I didn't try using the option where, like, you just arrow over until you get to your little avatar at the top left corner and then press A to open the guide. I normally just press the Xbox
button. Because I'm curious where you land if you do that. Like, if you do that, do you end up on your avatar and then you keep on going left? Or do you end up on the left and then you have to go right to get to stuff after you went left to get there, which would be a little bit weird, but is that any weirder than ending up in the middle? You know, who knows?
Right. All right. Well, the only other gaming story is that Sony, like so many other companies, had events planned for last week and just didn't feel like last week was the right week to be having events. So instead, they delayed it out and they didn't say when they would have it, but now they have. This Thursday, June 11th, 4 p.m. Eastern, is when Sony plans to have their big PlayStation 5 event. Like, they're calling it a PlayStation 5 event. They're not saying if we're going to see the console, we can absolutely expect to see lots of videos of games, but don't know if we're going to see the actual machine. It seems like at this point, we'll see the machine. Like, we'll actually see what the hardware looks like. Because if E3 were happening this year, that would be next week. So, you know, this is all the right timing for that sort of stuff. And then the big question is, will they announce the price and or the date? And I'm kind of guessing yes on date, no on price.
Oh, you just set me up so well.
Okay.
All right. So before all this COVID stuff happened, way before this, when the next generation Xbox was announced, you and I, you know, let's say artificially wagered about when we would know the price of the new Xbox. And you said that we would know the price of the new Xbox by E3. We're not having E3.
Right.
So where do you think Microsoft stands on this now?
Well, Microsoft hasn't announced their next event. So we know that they're having an event in July.
Right.
They've said they're going to show first party games at an event in July.
Right.
But they don't have anything scheduled for June. And when you listen to some of the interviews that guys like Phil Spencer from Xbox have been putting out there, it sounds like they're just going to keep waiting until Sony announces a price so that they can be sure that they're at the very least the same price, if not undercutting them.
Oh man.
Yeah, I think they're absolutely playing chicken with Sony on this one.
All right.
I mean, it's got to be this summer. I still absolutely think it's got to be this summer. But since E3 got, you know, blown up, and it is harder to guess. And it could be that Microsoft has specifically not announced a June event because they wanted to wait for, Sony to do something in June. But so maybe now they will announce one. You know, maybe it'll be next week. You know, if Sony announces date and price this week, like, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Microsoft 5 minutes after the show is like, oh, our event is next week, you know, and our device is $50 cheaper and comes out a week earlier, you know, something like that. Microsoft is going to do everything in their power to get the edge at the launch of these systems.
Yeah, just kind of crazy perspective. A year ago this week, I was in LA. I was in a cab driving past the Live Center in LA and seeing them set up for E3, which I wasn't there to attend. I was there for other meetings and meetups and stuff like that. But it's just crazy. Like, to think that a year ago I was there and meeting with all these people and doing all this stuff. And thinking about that is the first time in this entire mess that I have really hurt, like, wanting to reach out to and be with friends.
Mm. Yes. Yeah, that is one of the hardest parts of all of this.
Crazy.
All right. Well, that does it for our gaming news this week and all of our news. So before we get into what's going on in our entertainment center, the one thing that we would like to ask you all to do is just share this podcast with other people that you think might be interested in the news that we're talking about here. We don't care so much about iTunes reviews and all that stuff.
I mean, they're nice, but despite what other podcasters will tell you, they do not help them gain exposure. Right.
It doesn't work.
Doesn't work that way.
What does is telling people. So please get out there on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. Take a screenshot of you listening to this show and spread the love. We'd appreciate it. All right, Richard, what's going on in your entertainment center?
Oh my God, this seems so long ago. It's ridiculous. Last we talked about my Synology box, I was in the process of trying to get all of my content back onto my Drobo. Like, I wasn't even at the Synology. All my content was still on the Synology so that I could reformat my Drobo. So I got that all done, and I eventually had to just get rid of the SMR drives because they, in fact, were the problem. SMR, not good. Ironically, red SMR drives, not good for NASs. What are they doing? I don't know. But took them out, replaced them with non-SMR drives, with CMR drives, standard drives, the way that we're used to them working and physically storing content on the platters, and it worked fine. So I now have a potential 64 terabyte formatted space on my Drobo, which can actually, with the drives that I put in it, store up to 26 terabytes right now.
Wow.
And all my movies are back on there, and my Plex server is up and running, and I'm very happy about that. So that's all done. So then it's like, all right, time to set up Synology. So I moved all of the stuff that I had on my home server over to the Synology, and all the stuff that I had on my other media drives that I had backed up, put that all over on the Synology. So now the Synology is my network storage for a lot of stuff. And can I tell you how liberating it is to know that you have a NAS and all of these things where I have like folders on my computer or on attached drives that are like downloaded, I don't know, wallpapers and downloaded video clips and stock footage and images and all that. Just put that all out on the network. Like, none of that has to be taking room on my computer. I am loving that. Also, finally got Edward's computer set up, so now he has a network space, and we can easily transfer stuff back and forth. So I'm really happy with that. I have decommissioned my Windows home server. If we had a little taps sound, we would play that here now.
Right. Wow. So neither of us have Media Center machines running anymore. Neither of us have Windows home server machines running anymore.
That is right. That is right. I still have my old, I forget even what it was called. I think it was called a media server from HP that had like four drives in it, tiny little thing, adorable box. I love that thing that crashed at one point in time. And I'm hoping that I can solicit the goodwill of the folks over on the Reset forums to help me figure out if there is any way to recover what's on there. That died years ago, and I just kind of stuck it in the corner and said, I'll deal with it someday. I have old TiVo recordings on there. I have old videos, all kinds of stuff that I would love to get off there. If I can't get it, I can't get it, but it would be nice. So we'll see. Now, I had everything out on the Synology, and what do? I install their Photo Station software. I'm like, oh, this will be cool. I can use it to manage my photos. I enable HTTPS only access on it, and suddenly I can't ever get to the photo app again. No matter how many times I uninstall it or install it or whatever else, I cannot get to it. So I'm like, whoops. Well, screw it. I have a backup of everything, so I'll just build the Synology again. So I did. It didn't take that long. I got everything back out there again. But what I've come to realize after setting up the Disk Station Photo Station software properly is that I really need a good product for managing my photos, because I used to use Picasa, and Picasa was awesome. Picasa had this proprietary way of managing undestructive edits and, more importantly, metadata that you associated with your photos, and it didn't write that metadata to the photos exif files. It saved it in a separate Picasa INI file. Well, that's great. Picasa's dead. Google didn't give you any way to transfer that information to anything. And I have probably cumulatively between Edward and me days of time invested in managing, editing, labeling, tagging photos from 10 plus years. And I have no real way of getting to that information. So I'm trying to figure out, A, if there's a way of recovering that information. And there are some like really hacky ways, like, oh, well, run this C++ program. Right. Okay. That's not happening. And trying to figure out if there's anything I can use that will give me everything that I had out of Casa. I tried ACDC, which is something I used to use way in the past. And they kind of pissed me off in the beginning when I had to create an account with them just to be able to load the software in my computer. It's desktop software, but the only way it would actually let me run it is if I created a cloud account with them. Like, already, I don't trust you. Not a good way of handling things. So that's kind of my current digital asset conundrum. We talked about the TiVo Stream. So I've been playing with that a lot more. You know what? I have concluded that Sling TV is not a cable alternative for me.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I can't deal with the fact that, first of all, some channels record and some channels don't. More importantly, I can't deal with the fact that I can't pause some channels. We've been programmed that's how TV works for the last 20 years.
Right.
So I'm really not happy about that. I generally don't like the Sling experience. I do like that Sling has a pretty large library of on-demand content. So that kind of comes with your subscription, and each premium station that you add adds to that. So, for example, I have a 30-day trial of Showtime. That means that I have the entire Showtime archive on demand, which is kind of awesome. Like, and that integrates with TiVo's experience. So that's really slick. I just wish the Sling experience were better. I don't like how limited it is. The stations, I'm fine with the stations. I can live with not having locals because I can get all that content on Hulu later. So, yeah, it's, I don't know.
Yeah, you go with Sling TV because it costs the least amount of money and you kind of get what you pay for.
Well, it costs the least amount of money compared to cable, not compared to its competitors, right?
No, even compared to its competitors, because really? I think the cheapest option with Sling TV is like $30 a month.
Well, and it is, but if you want all the channels and DVR, you're paying at least $55. I'm paying more than that for the like packages that I have.
Yeah. But for a lot of people, they might not care about getting orange and blue. Like orange or blue might be enough. And if so, then you could be saving $20+ a month over the other competitors.
Yeah. I wish I could get orange and blue, but take out all the sports packages because I just don't care.
Yeah, that would probably cost a lot less.
Right. That's what I'm saying. All right. Well, anyway, so the remote, I had really hoped that this would be the remote that I could sell Edward on, that this would be the remote he would be happy with, one remote to control them all. And it fails in two areas. Well, one area, really. And that's that playing back content on every source is a little bit different because there are no transport buttons. There's no play, pause, fast forward, rewind, skip back. There's none of that. You use your D-pad for that. And every app, so content from every app is basically in the TiVo experience played through that app's player.
Right.
It's not played through a common player like Apple TV. If I watch something on Apple TV, with rare exception, everybody's using the same player. So navigating in that content is identical. That is not the experience that you have on the TiVo stream. Every app has its own way of doing it. And so pausing may be pressing the select button once. It may be pressing it twice. It may be pressing it and then arrowing down and then selecting it. It makes me crazy that they haven't actually just made that consistent. And they could have done that with standard transport buttons. Instead, they have used, which I thought was brilliant at the time, 12 button spaces on this remote for a numeric keypad that I have not once had use for yet.
Yeah, right. Because
they don't number their channels.
Well, yeah, like that's the only time I can think of that I would use the numbers on a regular cable box remote control. It's right. to switch to channel 1,247.
Exactly. Yep. And there are no channel numbers. So I don't get it. I don't get it. I mean, the playback experience is good. It's still fast. I hope they improve it. Someone on Dave's comments for one of his posts today, Dave Zatz, really summed this up well, saying it's just not there yet. And that's my bottom line impression on this is, it has a lot of potential, but it is just not there yet. So I don't see myself sticking with it past a first month trial. I'll go back to it in 6 months to see how it is. Hopefully it's better by then, but I need to get back to our regular TiVo experience because I'm pissing Edward off.
Well, I might be putting my family through it. So maybe next week we'll have my family's experienced it, but the part for me that I'm unsure of is like I don't think that this can be set up easily with the Harmony, and
right. That's
not the worst thing in the world because the remote is pretty good.
It's good if it's all you're using,
and it would kind of be all that we're using, except that don't know that I can count on the CEC for controlling the volume through the receiver and all of that stuff.
I think it probably will work for you as long as you don't have other devices competing. The problem for me is that I have other always-on devices. I have a Fire TV. I have an Apple TV. I have a Roku. They're always on. So they're always vying for attention, including the TV itself. And occasionally it switches to the TV as input. I'm like, no, that's the last thing that I want.
So, yeah. So the question for me then is, do I unplug my TiVo to plug in the TiVo stream, or do I unplug my Shield to plug in the TiVo stream?
Oh, yeah. See, that's really interesting. I would think that you would need to unplug your Shield because the TiVo rarely wins in the CEC war.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about what I've been watching. I mentioned the last time we talked about this stuff that I had gone back to watching Treadstone. I had kind of given up on it because I was having trouble keeping track. And part of the reason was that I just wasn't paying attention. This is one of those shows that I tried to multitask while I was watching, like do whatever on my tablet or that you can't do that. You had to pay attention. And we talked about all these, like part of the problem was they had all these actors that looked so similar. So you really needed to track who was who and where were they? And more importantly, when were they? And they never really resolved that without you just paying attention. So I went back, watched the whole thing. I really, really enjoyed it. I thoroughly loved this show. It didn't get renewed. I'm left with like 7 cliffhangers. They wrapped up some of what happened in season 1, but so much left undone, and it didn't get renewed by USA Today or USA Today by USA Network. Yeah,
that stinks. That really stinks.
Yeah. So, hey, Josh, you going to go back to it?
Nope. Not a chance. Not a chance.
All right. Well, I watched the most recent episode of Disney Insider. Really good. Lots of cool stuff that they're doing there. I watched the first couple episodes of the new season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That is really clever, and I'm very excited that they're going to be able to bring some interesting old characters that we know into that because of how they're time traveling in this season. Shameless season 10 is one of the things that I'm able to watch with my Sling TV trial that I have now. So I've been watching that, and I am mostly through that. I always love the show. It's irreverent. It's funny. I get a big kick out of this. So I think the season has also been good. It's a little bit different because Emmy Rossum, who was the big Broadway star that kicked this whole thing off, isn't even on the show this season. I started the new series around the story Snowpiercer. You may remember the movie Snowpiercer on Netflix. Well, TNT made a TV series out of it. First couple episodes, really good, really intense, seriously high budget. I hope they don't cancel it after the first season. I also started watching What We Do in the Shadows. This is a Hulu series. It is, I think it's a Hulu series. I think it's a Hulu original anyway. It's on Hulu. It is basically The Office for vampires. So think mock documentary about the life of vampires behind the scenes.
That's different.
It's hysterical. It's absolutely hysterical. Edward and I both started watching this and loving it. We watched an episode. I don't usually get to watch this, but there was an episode of the American Experience series on PBS that looked particularly interesting called Mr. Tornado. I looked into it, and it was all about the guy that they named the F-scale afterward. So it basically a Japanese immigrant who came to the U.S. to study weather and then teach weather systems and ultimately research and learn all about how tornadoes work. He like upended the system completely. People just didn't believe anything that he was selling them. And he was right again and again and again and again. And his name, I forget what his name is, but his name started with an F, and that's how he ended up with the F scale. Really cool series if you're into discovery type stuff. We watched a bunch of old movies the past couple of weeks. They're all old. Guess how
really
well, you don't have to guess because you can see, because I put it in here because they're so old. So the first one was The Secret of My Success. That's an 80s movie that I just loved when I was in college. And I ended up watching it. I found that it was on one of the services that we had. I think it was HBO
like Pluto?
Max. No, it was on HBO Max. And it was in HD. And I'm like, wait a minute. The Secret of My Success in HD? I have to check it out. It was beautiful. Hmm. And it was just a whole lot of fun. I thoroughly enjoyed that. Everything from the 80s. The big shoulders, the big hair, the David Foster soundtrack, everything you'd expect out of an 80s series starring Michael Fox. Also, we watched 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, a Disney classic. I had never seen this movie.
Nope, me neither.
Never. 1954, starring James Mason, when he was young, believe it or not. So I was thoroughly fascinated by this movie. I enjoyed it. It was weird. Really heavy messaging, relevant messaging for our current issues that we're dealing with. And it was really good. Weird ending, but I would recommend it. I think it's interesting, and it's some interesting Disney lore. Kind of surprised it didn't come with a disclaimer at the beginning that this, you know, this movie represents views that aren't blah, 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 you know, the normal thing that you see in front of a lot of the old Disney movies nowadays.
Right.
And then because it was James Mason, I decided, okay, I'm going to watch another James Mason movie that I remember, Heaven Can Wait, which was on yet another streaming service that I have. And another one of my movies that as a child, I loved this movie. I still really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. We watched nothing current. It was all old stuff. Anyway, the current stuff was kind of newsworthy. Hey, did you know we put men in space in basically a machine that looked like a friggin' iPhone?
And we did it launching them from this country.
Yeah. Yeah. Like how crazy. So I watched all of the coverage on the first attempt to launch on Wednesday of last week. And that didn't come off because of weather conditions, but everything else in the countdown went smoothly. And then I watched the second launch attempt on Saturday, just like the last hour. I wasn't going to watch all of that going out to the thing. No, I couldn't do it again. But watch the launch and then watch the docking. That was just so friggin' cool. I mean, you know what a big, crazy space buff I am. And man, it was just so cool. I loved it.
That is cool. I didn't get to watch it, unfortunately, but that is cool.
And then finally, I subscribed to two new podcasts. One, a new show from Tom Merritt and Patrick Beja called, and this name is just brilliant, called Work in Sanity. And it's a show about how to optimize your experience when you're working at home. Short takes, usually 15 to 20 minutes, which is just ideal for a podcast. I wish I could do that because I love that. That's a perfect size. And then the second show that I subscribed to, I didn't end up subscribing to any of the shows that we talked about last week, but I subscribed to a show from the UK called Techish. And it's a show hosted by two people of color in the UK, both fairly young, a man and a woman. And Techish is a play on Blackish. It's also a play on ish, meaning kind of they're talking about tech stuff. So
tech and tech adjacent.
Well, meaning, you know, tech-ish, meaning saying ish instead of turn that word around. And it's I love it. I absolutely love it because they talk about tech and they talk about racial stuff. And it's really, really good. And they're two very young, energetic and interesting perspectives on things. So I'm excited about that. And we'll have, I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes because I think that is an awesome thing that you should also consider. In subscribing to both of these, I'm reminded that Pocket Casts, not only bad at onboarding, bad at subscribing. Josh, what, when you subscribe...
What's so bad about subscribing?
When you subscribe to a new show, it brings every episode in. And then you have to figure out, okay, how do I deal with getting just the last couple that I care about into my, like, into a filter so that they're in my list of things, my queue that I'm listening to versus all the old stuff that I'm probably not going to listen to. I just want to get rid of it. It's a hassle.
Huh. I guess maybe I didn't notice that. Let me double check, because I did subscribe. I mean, we talked a lot about podcasts last week and other ones, and I subscribed to a new one called Spawn on Me, which is a video game podcast, which, and anybody who's listening to this who also listens to video game podcasts, they probably heard about it because one of the main guys from it was also on IGN's Xbox podcast this week. They talked about it a lot on What's Good Games, which is another really popular video game podcast. So that's how I heard about Spawn on Me. And I subscribed to that in Pocket Cast, and I think it only downloaded the last two episodes or something like that. So I don't know.
Maybe I'm doing it wrong. Maybe it's just a UX thing where I don't understand the process, but it's, yeah, I'm not excited about it. I like the player. I really like the player. Oh, one thing, if you subscribe to Techish, play it at 1.0 speed. They talk so fast and English accents. So I'm really having to pay attention.
Right. I do generally, I can't typically listen to English, and by English, I mean like UK English.
Right.
I can't do those at 1.75x usually.
1.7?
Yeah, that's what I listen to most things at nowadays.
No, I had to turn off, I had to bring it down to 1.0 and turn off the silence elimination.
And that's kind of crazy to think of when it's the same language that you speak.
I know. This is what we did to that language.
I mean, we made it better, but... but yeah, even like our friends over at the Digital Lifestyle, that one I frequently have to turn down also. And I've been listening to Ian Dixon for 15 years.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. No, I agree. Tony in the chat is recommending that in Pocket Casts you could mark all as play, or maybe you could archive all. I think the problem then is that I don't want to archive all. I want to include a certain number of them in a filter that will get it into my playlist. So I don't know. It's not obvious enough to me. Like when I subscribe to something in pretty much any other player, it knows, all right, well, the last episode or two, we're going to just automatically assume that that's all you want to download.
Yeah, I have a filter called new releases, and I don't know if that's one I made or if they have it by default.
I think that's default.
Okay. Maybe just go with that. I don't know. Play with it. I'm sure you can figure out a way to make it work well for you, because there's so many options. All right. Well, that looks like we've made it to the end of your list. My list is quite short.
Surprise!
Especially compared to yours. But man, last week was a week. And between just like, you know, being wiped out emotionally, mentally, you know, work was chaotic. Plus lots of other things going on. I just didn't have much time to do much. I had to fire up my Xbox just to see what the last couple of things are that I've played. It was Call of Duty, which is not surprising, and Project Cars 2, because I wanted to do some racing. I do really like that game. Really wish that I had a steering wheel that worked with my Xbox. But even that was over a week ago. And I never fired up my Xbox over the weekend to play anything. Didn't fire up my Switch. Nothing. You know, I haven't played The Last of Us at all. I watched like nothing. It was just kind of a crazy weekend and a crazy week. I've been listening to some audiobooks. I've continued to work on The Dark Tower. I think it's book 4, called Wizard in Glass. I mentioned this on the previous episode where we talked about what we've been watching. Still got some time left in that one. I'm curious, for any of our listeners who have read the Dark Tower series, this book is driving me insane. Like, I kind of want to give up on this book and the series, because the book starts kind of like normal, and then they're like, let me tell you about this story that happened to me when I was a youth. And it's the rest of the friggin' book. Like, this is I think it's like a 25-ish hour book. And maybe the first couple of hours were like, here's what's going on now. And then the rest of it, and I have 10-ish hours left, maybe, has been this story from his youth. And it's an interesting story, but it's like, okay, yep, positive that character is going to die. Absolutely positive this person dies. There's no way they don't make it out of this story alive, even though it seems to be that this character is the most important part of this particular part of the story, that they're going to die. These other people are probably going to die. What's the point? Like, I don't understand why this is an entire book in this series. So I would love it if anybody has listened to The Dark Tower or read The Dark Tower and read Wizard in Glass. Like, is this going to have any sort of payoff, or am I just kind of wasting my time and I should have skipped this book? I don't know. A little frustrated. You know, on a similar note, I had talked a few months ago about how I read The Wanderers from Chuck Wendig, which is a pandemic-y sort of book and sci-fi and all this stuff. And I enjoyed it. I thought it was a really interesting story. And I recommended it to Jen, who is a way bigger reader than I am. She was not happy. She wanted to give up on this book like 30% of the way through. She hung in there, finished it. She didn't like it. She didn't like the ending especially. That book got a lot of critical acclaim, but it's apparently not for everybody. So hopefully I should have this Dark Tower book finished soon. And then I think the hold list on the next one is like 11 weeks. So it's going to be a while before I get to listen to the next one. That's it. That's all I got. You know, I did mention that other new podcast that I've been listening to. I'm definitely going to subscribe to Techish. That sounds really, really cool. So that's it. That's it for me. So that's it for the show. If you want to get a hold of us, we're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. All of those other places. All of that contact information is over at our website, thedigitalmediazone.com. While you're there, check out Richard's other podcast. It's called Home On, covering the latest smart home news. Richard, what's going on with Home On?
This week, I am recording a new episode with one of the co-founders of Connected Yard, and they are the makers of a smart pool product. So that ought to be interesting, because we've really never ventured into pool technology before. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and quite timely, considering it's summer.
So. Exactly.
Yeah, nice. Cool. Well, we typically record the show live. We recorded it live tonight using Mixer. You can find that over at our website. There's a big live button. You can also just follow us on Twitter, and we tweet when we're going to be doing the show, which is typically Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. It wasn't this week. We had to do it a day early this week. But just follow us on Twitter, and you will know for sure when we're going to be live, because we love having you all in the chat. So that's going to do it for episode 522. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.